Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrapped Web. Brian, it's been a while. It's great to be back in the pod seat.
That's right. Sorry for the break, folks. But yeah, good to be back. I was in Europe for about 3 weeks there, running around with the family and getting a little bit of work done while I was on trains and it being too hot outside during the heat wave. So hanging out in the Airbnbs, but that was a good time. But yeah, good to be back home now.
Yeah, the pictures look beautiful. Yeah, I've been saving up a list of notes on what to talk about in the next podcast episode, and it's been a while, so that list is long. Yeah, so sorry for the hiatus, and thank you for listening. You know, I was thinking about it last night, Brian. I feel like we purposely pretend no one is listening so we can have the open right. Conversations. Yeah. You have to like put that out of your mind. But I've been getting a bunch of emails, and I've been doing other podcasts and everything, and yeah, I love this podcast, and thank you everyone who's listening out there.
I totally second that, and I'm a fan of this podcast just as much as everyone else, you know, and a fan of talking to you. And yeah, like you said, I do try to block out the idea that other people are listening, and we try to be as real as possible. I mean, we are having real conversations here, so yeah, that's what it's all about.
Good, and today we have some things to dig into. On my side, the big thing to talk about is the pricing and sales process change. And then how about for you?
Yeah, for me, it's basically all process kit. That's been my full-time focus, obviously, and a lot of things going on. So I forgot exactly where we left off in the last episode, but I did start rolling it out to first users. We do have the first paying customers, which is exciting.
Congratulations.
But it is not without its challenges and things that I'm confused about and trying to figure out, and it's in a weird state. I just sent to my newsletter a new article that I wrote this morning called Falling Behind on Schedule. I tweeted about this too, where for months as you're leading up to the launch or the rollout of a new product, especially a software like a SaaS product, it's very methodical. It's step by step. It's let's build feature A and then feature B and then feature C, and we'll do some customer research, and it's calm. It's you know exactly what you need to do first, second, and third. But then once you start to release things to users and then get the first paying customers, it's like you're all of a sudden behind on everything on like six different fronts. You know, whether it's the product needs iteration, you're going after that product market fit, which means the marketing site is not up to date, which means your onboarding is not right, which means you're not doing enough outreach, which means you need to book 20 more customer calls while you're also trying to work on the product. It's, you know, things just get crazy just all of a sudden. And I was traveling through 3 weeks of that. So yeah, it's that's kind of where my head's at right now.
Yeah, you've made contact. Everything up until now has been planning. And now you're in the battle, and hopefully you're getting feedback that's at least right. You don't want crickets, anything but crickets. If you're getting feedback and people requesting things and saying this isn't good enough and we're missing this and it would be great if it worked this way, at least now you have a crumb trail to start to follow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like just the things that I have on the list to talk about today are basically just where things stand with the product. I sort of just touched on that, but then the main objections that I'm hearing to, you know, I'm trying to overcome that conversion rate of the trial to conversion rate and the objections to get over that. And I have some thoughts on some initial adjustments that I think I need to make, but I don't want to make changes too early in this process. So, and those relate to the product, it relates to the pricing model, how I'm onboarding and getting people to adopt it. And I think all of this relates under the umbrella of product market fit. Like I have an interested list, an interested audience. It very much aligns with my audience, but I'm trying to nail it down even more specific than that. Like who is the ideal customer and how can I go after them? And then align the product to its product market fit, right? So
yes. Yes. It's gotta click together. I know I told you yesterday we were having a meeting internally at Carthook and we talked about process, and Ed on our team brought up wanting to use Process Kit. And so I assume he and you are going to go through a similar process where he's excited about it, and then he's going to learn more in the demo, and then you'll see how many degrees off you are from really satisfying what we need. And then you'll see, is Carthook an ideal customer that you should be listening to or you should be ignoring?
Right.
Yep. Right. That's tricky.
Cool. So let's dive in. Where should we begin?
The big thing for me to talk about is the pricing change. And if I'm being honest with myself, I would say that we took way too long. It was a good 6 months from the time we said, hey, we want to do this, to the time we actually launched the pricing change. It took 6 months, which is the way I talked about it internally to the team that's responsible for the pricing change was, if we held ourselves to the same standards as we do our engineering team, we would demand a retrospective of ourselves and to see why in the world it possibly took us 6 months. So
it's that classic thing of like, oh, it's just a pricing change. Why? It's not like you're building a whole new feature, but as we all know, like pricing is totally integrated into the product, into the process.
Yes. And we have a lot of customers now. The big thing was not the pricing. The big thing was the process. And so what we did at the same time was we switched from self-serve free trial to requiring a demo. So it really did require a lot of things to be shifted along with the pricing. So that there's some excuse for it taking a longer amount of time, but it shouldn't have taken this long. But we got it out the door. It was a big effort. As things got closer, it was really a lot of work those last 2 weeks.
Are you talking about the actual price point publicly? And like, what was the before state and what was the after state of this?
Sure. So we purposely went with the option of publishing the price alongside requesting a demo. So it's public. So where we started off was at $300 a month as the subscription fee, and then $100 for each additional 100,000 in processing. So the subscription fee element was 300, and then the transaction fee element was 0.1%, right? 0.1%, which is the same thing as $100 per 100K. And then our larger enterprise customers, we would make deals with and kind of set the pricing more appropriate, whether it was 2,000 a month or, you know, something different. But our normal pricing was at 300. What we've done now is we switched it over to $500 a month as the beginning subscription fee, and then 0.5% transaction fee, which is a 5X on the transaction fee.
So in terms of like how you're presenting that to customers, are you saying 0.5 per transaction, or are you saying?
We're saying like 0.5% of revenue processed by Carthook.
Okay. So it's not like you're tiering it in chunks of 100K anymore.
Nope. Exactly. No more 100K, no more per like additional 100. It's just straightforward transaction fee. And then the tricky part is that we're changing the price on existing customers.
Ooh.
Yes. That's a difficult thing. Now, we're not changing the pricing on existing customers until January.
And you're giving them like a 6 month notice.
Not just 6 months. The important part was that we're not going to mess with anything during the holidays. They have Carthook set up, they're integrated into their business, and we really should not mess with their holiday season. It's our choice to make this change, but we really should back off and let them go through the holidays totally unfettered. And then in January, they get to make a decision if they want to stick with the product, even though it's more expensive, or they don't.
So can you walk me through like some of the thinking on that? Like, why not just grandfather people in?
So we are grandfathering people into their existing subscription fee. So if you pay $300 a month right now, that will never change.
Okay, but so it's just the transaction fee.
The transaction fee, and really what's happening is that, you know, we are processing tens of millions of dollars, and that is a lot of work and a lot of stress and a lot of infrastructure, and we don't feel like that we are appropriately compensated for that. We are not capturing as much of that GMV as we should. Like, for example, Shopify captures roughly 100 basis points, roughly 1% effectively of their GMV, and we are capturing a fraction of that. And so that was our thinking, and you know, we expect to lose customers over it.
Do you have like direct competitors that you're looking at that when this pricing change hits, you have to keep an eye on them?
We are already significantly more expensive, and this makes us astronomically more expensive than the competitors, and we are okay with that. The bigger thing is not the pricing change. The bigger thing is the process change. So what happened in our business is that we would have a band of really great customers that love us and we love them, and they get a ton of value from it. I just sent out a tweet 10 minutes ago before we started this podcast, I saw someone did $330,000 in upsell revenue alone in the past 30 days. And that tells you we are not too expensive. They are making an enormous, a preposterous ROI, which is awesome. It's how it should be. So the thing for us was that band of happy customers. Alongside that, below that was a washing machine of churn.
That was going to be my next question, because I remember that this whole change was really about churn and fixing the new customers, like people who've just signed up in the last few months, making sure that those customers are good customers to begin with. And that's why I was wondering about the grandfathering thing, because you're talking about the customers who've been there a while. And I totally see the problem that you're solving there. I mean, you are delivering a ton of value that they should be paying more for. But the initial problem that you set out to solve was the churn issue, right?
You know, churn is one factor of health. It shows you how healthy or unhealthy things are. So the real aim is to create a healthier business. So churn is part of that. There are other parts of it. The other parts of it are team happiness, who we work with, the type of people, the type of merchant that we work with. We really enjoy working closely with larger merchants where we are a real partner. We don't like the impersonal, transactional, often not nearly as nice to work with merchants.
Yeah. And so I guess it would then create like a first class and second class customer, and you know.
Yes, that's right. And then obviously revenue and revenue per user alongside churn. So this is aimed at the health of the business. So what was happening, because it was self-serve, it looked phenomenal. We would get somewhere in the area of $75,000 in MRR worth of trials every month, which is ridiculous. It was amazing, but it wasn't healthy. And so what would happen is people would come in, they would pay once or twice, and then they'd leave. And it would make our churn look bad. And more importantly, it would create a situation where our team was doing an enormous amount of work for merchants that were not going to become good customers. So all of this is aimed at removing as much of that as possible. And so along with the pricing change, we remove the ability to create a trial on your own. And now we've replaced it with not just a schedule a demo, but an actual application process. So now when you go to CartHook, it says request a demo, and it is honest in requesting. It is not just given. And so we have an application, and we reject a fair number of the people who apply because we don't think they're going to be good customers. And then only if you are approved do you then get a link to schedule a demo, and then you talk to someone, and then we begin the relationship the way we believe will lead to success for both sides.
Yeah, I like that. And the approval process, is that primarily based on their revenue in their store?
It's not. It used to be based on revenue. We used to look at, okay, once you connect your app, we take a look at your 30-day revenue, and that gives us an indication of how good of a customer you're going to be. The problem with that is it's so easy to look at that, and so that's why it gets looked at. It's like, how much money do you make? You know, pretty straightforward. But there are many other factors. So there's a great article by Lincoln Murphy, the guy who's known for customer success. He wrote about the different types of fit. And so we look at these different metrics. We look at, right, revenue is one piece of the fit. Then there's also cultural fit. Is this merchant doing things that we agree with? Are they pushing it too far? Do they have a team that's cool that they like to work with our team? Or do they just never want to talk to us and don't treat us nicely? Then there's also strategic fit. There's like all these different metrics that we take into account. We look at their site, we look at their approach, we look at the type of team they are. So we're trying to dial that in to a better extent. The stress around it is the irony, we had our largest trial week ever the week before we switched, which was just like this
like, irony. Why are we doing this again?
Yes, it was definitely a why are we doing this again? So right now we're in a period, all of this is coinciding with a period of pushing it on the expenses. And we've talked about the bootstrap approach of, okay, let's get close to profitability. Then we hit profitability, and then you purposely say, okay, now we want to grow faster. Let's hire ahead of the revenue, start losing money, start burning, and then make our way back to profitability soon.
Yeah. I think the nice thing about raising prices is that you can be more selective, whether that means in your sales process, approval process for new customers, or just the way that you market and the resources that you can put into marketing, is because every customer is worth more. With audience ops, I mean, there is some like natural vetting of new customers just through my sales call with them. I mean, if the sales call is just a difficult conversation, they're just not going to sign up. And I don't think that I'm a difficult person, you know? So it's like...
Yeah, I was going to say the mindset matters a lot. It is not an application to see if you are good enough to work with us. Like, that is the wrong mindset. It is a conversation and a process to understand if it is a good fit for both sides, as much as them interviewing us and testing us out and prodding and seeing if we're a good fit for them, as much as the other way around. The stress comes out of the fact that if we assume that we have a good number of people in the system right now that are going to churn out in the next 30 to 60 days like they normally would, but they would be replaced by new signups, we are now not going to replace it with the same number of signups. And so the next 30 to 60 days, you know, has the potential to get a little hairy and burn more than we wanted right at a period where we've extended ourselves on hiring. I'm a little stressed on the just cash management situation overall. And I'm kind of considering my financing options on that side of things. Fortunately, we're in the second week and it's working. And so people are going through the process. We now have a funnel.
The changes that you're making here are like, it's revenue. So that takes a few weeks or months to kick in to see the results. And it's the hiring and that takes a few months to kick in and see the return. So it's, yeah, I could see how the stress, but it takes some time to get that over that hump, you know?
Yes. We just kind of have to, you know, just bear through it, but we know it's the right thing. So we just, what we've talked about internally is just helping like prop each other up, so no one freaks out. Or it's like, no, we're just going to see this through and it's going to be better at the end of the day. The other thing that we did that I didn't mention that goes along with the process change is that we removed the trial. So now you pay that $500 up front. So it's not a trial. So you pay, you put skin in the game, and then you have a 30-day money-back guarantee. And so what we did in Stripe, and this is a good tip that was given to me by Aaron at ShipHero, the CEO of ShipHero, what we did in Stripe is that we did not put people on a plan immediately. What we did is we charge immediately and then put them on a trial. And what that does is it does two things. First, it allows us to... Yeah, you know, exactly. The Stripe, it's not
tricks, doesn't skew your metrics.
Exactly right. It's not tricks. It's strategy, right? So you get the $500 up front, but then they get put on a trial. So it doesn't add to your MRR because they're not really in your MRR yet. They're still in a 30-day period. It also allows us to very easily look at who's currently in trial. So we get an accurate reflection of that. And then additionally, if someone cancels and requests a refund, it does not count toward your churn because they were in trial. So that was a very important piece of it. That way, 6 months from today, our churn's going to look accurate. Whereas now when I talk about our churn, it's like, yeah, but ignore how high it is. It's not really that high. It's that people come in, they pay after 14 days, and then they leave. So it's like our 90-day churn was what I asked people to look at, but it was a difficult number to get past. So now we are officially managing a pipeline. And what we've done, this is a Twitter suggestion, actually. Actually, it was a suggestion from Ryan, and then I went to Twitter on how to get it done. What we've done is we've taken index cards, and we've created our HubSpot pipeline up on our wall. And so now it's physical. It is a visceral reminder. You walk in the morning, you move people over into stages. When they go from approved.
It's a paper CRM. I love it.
It's a yes. And it's, you know, everything's in HubSpot, but this is a visual representation. We can see who's in the pipeline, who's in onboarding, who's about to convert. Then when you take over the index card that goes from demo done to then they signed up and paid, we have a bell. So you go bing, 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 bing,
that's
bing,
awesome.
Bing, everyone. So we're trying to.
I remember the very first few months of Audience Ops, I had a big whiteboard. It was a really exciting time because it was like Audience Ops was growing so much faster than I expected in the very earliest weeks of it. I mean, it went from zero to like over 10K MRR in, I don't know, 60 days, 90 days, something like that. I was just figuring out the value proposition. I was way far away from even thinking about CRM tools or anything. So I was just like, let me just write these people's names on this whiteboard. And every morning it was like, all right, that's what the pipeline looks like. Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, so we're happy about that suggestion. And then the very last piece of it is the communication. And the blog post that I wrote on explaining the changes, how it's affecting existing customers, new customers, the reasoning for it, that blog post took like 6 hours. I think it came out good. The truth is we have had very little pushback. I think there will be pushback in January when we actually make the change, but so far so good.
I think the thing that is on everyone's minds, probably on this podcast, is like the drip, the recent drip change. What we can learn from that and do it better. I mean, it sounds like you are doing the right things. I mean, what we're like more than 6 months out from the actual, like you're giving people plenty of time. You know, you're not going to do it over the holidays.
Yes. And I wrote very honestly in that blog post, really what we need to do is we need to earn the pricing increase over the next 6 months. And in January, if you don't think we've added enough value, you're going to walk, and rightfully. So that we like that pressure. And I kind of talked about that. The drip situation was top of mind. The truth is the blog post I wrote was not good enough at first. And I shared it with a few people that both of us know, mostly in my Portland MicroConf community. And they came back to me and said, that's just not good enough. And here's the mistakes you're repeating that drip made, where you're not giving this level of detail and this thing. And that's when I went back to the drawing board and bulked up that blog post all the way and then released it.
I didn't see it, but the thing that I remember about it as a drip customer, and a lot of people talked about it, is just, I don't know what my new price is going to be. They didn't even mention, they said there's going to be a price increase, but they didn't tell me how much. And that implied to me like, oh, it's probably not that much. I don't care. And it was a lot. It was like
right
over 2x, you know. So it was like, yeah, that was the thing. Cool.
That's the big thing on my side. How about you? Give us an update on Process Kit and the situation you're in right now after launching.
Yeah, I mean, this is not going to be the kind of thing where week to week I'm going to be announcing my customer numbers or anything like that. But mm-hmm. You know, it's super early days here, and so I invited a small chunk of the early access list. I've been doing chunks of them every week for the last 5 or 6 weeks, and 3 of those weeks I was actually in Europe, but I was sort of working a little bit each day. So I've been sending invites. Roughly half, a little bit more than half, get the invite and they went ahead and opened their account on Process Kit, their free trial account. And then of those, it's been a lower than I would like to see conversion rate to paid, but we do have our first couple of paying customers in Process Kit now. Before I get into the things that I think are issues that I need to deal with, my initial stab at this setup is this, and I lay this out in the invite email. So when I send them the email, like they have all the details up front, they can decide whether or not they actually want to move forward with a trial or not. But that is a self-serve trial, and it's, I'm giving them the pricing details. I'm saying it's a 7-day free trial, no credit card up front. And then at the end of the 7 days, there is no free plan. They'll get locked out of their account, and then it's, the pricing as it stands today is $49 a month base plan, and that includes your first 3 people, your first 3 users. After that, it's $19 a month per user for your 4th person and up. So I lay all that out in the initial email. 150 or so, a little bit more than 150 now, have created accounts, and only a couple of them I could count on one hand have converted to paying customers. What else do I have in place? I had a very bare bones MailChimp drip campaign that goes throughout the 7 days to try to keep them engaged a little bit. That on the 7th day or around it, they're getting, you know, hey, time to upgrade, put your credit card in, you know, whatever I wrote in that email. And then I'm actually actively offering like a trial extension. I'll say, hey, like if you want an extra week or two, I'd love to give you a trial extension. About 10 people or so now have taken me up on that offer.
Seeing that as an indicator of like seriousness of, oh, I want to keep exploring this?
Yeah. The thinking there was like, let me try a shorter than normal trial period, 7 days. Most people do like whatever, 14 or 30 or something. I wanted to do 7 days because I just don't like the idea of like 30 days. Like when I trial something, I try it out for like 2 days. And then if I like, I'm going to forget about it 30 days from now. So 7 days so that they could like get started today. They can make a decision by the end of the week or next week. But if they get busy, I'm actively giving them the trial extension. And that tells me like that the goal there is just to get into more conversations, more, whether it's email, live chat, or on a call. So 10 people have taken me up on that. And then, but then like beyond that, I'm just getting a lot of feedback too, just from users who are trying it out. I still have the Slack and the Facebook group going. I get some feedback through there. People email. Right now I'm getting back to scheduling more calls, but I was traveling, so I didn't do as many calls. I think that it is too early to be overly concerned about the conversion rate of trial to paid. There's so much that needs to be done. I mean, the one thing is that the early access list, the people who've been waiting for an invite to Process Kit, I mean, they've been sitting on the list for months, some almost a year at this point. I mean, we are adding new people on the list every day. So the timing of that is not right. So if you have most of these people, just like, even if they are a good fit for the product, even if they have a team and they have repeatable projects and they need processes, just July 2019 was not the month that they were planning on overhauling their processes and getting their team to adopt a new tool. They've been sitting on this waiting list. They weren't actively seeking out this solution today. So I'm keeping that in mind. And I'm hearing that from people. They're just like, I'm too busy, or we're too busy on this, on our projects right now to think about that. And I knew that would be will continue to be a hurdle to get over, is like getting people to commit the time to give it a fair trial and to get their team to adopt it and work it into their workflows. That's challenge number one. So like I have done no active marketing to people who are currently searching for this type of tool. Like, we don't really have a marketing site yet. We only have the pre-launch page, which still says that the thing doesn't even exist yet when it actually does, you know.
You're only getting information from people who are aware of it, not from people seeking out the solution yet. I mean, exactly. There's so many different factors here.
Yeah, exactly. And like, even people who are on the waiting list, I've only invited like 20% of them so far. And less than that, like 15%. And so I get people every day who are like, oh, wait, is Process Kit available now? Wait, I'd love my invite now, please. You know, like I get that. So that's intentional. I did not do like, hey, everyone, come sign up for Process Kit now. Like I didn't do that. So I'm just sending out like 30 or 40 invites a week. And, you know.
My assumption, correct me if I'm wrong, is this is like the most doubt-filled moment of the process so far. Like, it's set up to just be filled with doubt of like, did I just do the right thing? Did I just spend all this time? Did people really want it? Like, all those questions now come up now that it's launched.
Yeah. I'm sort of questioning the process of how to roll out a new app. And what I've been going with is the slow launch. Like, I'm not really intending on doing a August 1st is the day that we're going to... Yeah, it's not that. It's I have this list and I don't want to burn the list all in one swoop, you know? So I'm just sending it out to small batches and I'm getting feedback from those people, and the feedback that I am getting, and we can get into more of the product features and things that I need to work on, is like, at this point now I need to figure out what are the highest priorities, because I've built, I'd say, about 60 or 70% of the tool, of like the core functionality. Like, it has projects, it has processes, and you can apply your processes to projects. You can invite people and assign them to tasks and things like that. Like, I have a whole list of other features that I had intended on building that are more like power features. So like automation rules, custom fields, template emails that you can send off from a step in a process, stuff like that. I'm trying to figure out what is most important to build first, because every one of these features is going to take several weeks to build. It's the more complex stuff. It's going to take more time. But I'm also trying to align, like, all right, this feature will allow me to say this on the marketing site and overcome that objection with once I ship that feature. I'm trying to process through that, through that feedback, and then get these features built, and then start to be more public about, hey, this is a product that I can really go to market with.
Okay. I would challenge that a touch to err toward doing it prematurely as opposed to wait until everything's ready.
I would say that I have begun. Like, I'm still inviting people to say, hey, sign up for your trial right now. Like, And if it's good, go ahead and pay for it. Like, it's there. The other thing that I'm doing is like, if anybody personally reaches out to me, you get your invite right now. Like I'm basically picking 30 or 40 people from the list every week and I'm inviting them and I'm mentioning new features that I'm working on. I post videos of those and stuff like that. If anybody then follows up with me to say, hey, I'd love my invite now, like you'll get your invite right now. Like,
you know, you get a lot of credit for saying coming soon. So a lot of those features that you have planned, I would consider just publishing them on the marketing site and just saying coming soon.
Right. Well, so that's the other thing is like, I don't even have a marketing site. I have a one page manifesto, like enter your email for this pre-launch product.
Yes, I read that and the copy's good. And so you are identifying the right people, but I hear you on that's just doesn't do the same thing. It can attract the early true believers, but it's not going to attract the 30-person team that's just looking for a solution.
And before my trip, I went through the process of interviewing some designers, maybe outsourcing the building of the marketing site. And I did work with Liana Patch on to use her tagline to punch up my copy.
Yes, and I just hung out with her in Portland the other week. What's up, Liana?
Awesome. Yeah, so she did a really great job. I love her work. And the work that she did was on a rough wireframe of my copy that I have not published yet. So it's not like the stuff that you see now. I kind of started the work on what a full marketing site would look like, but I have not done much and I'm too busy working on the product to do that. But I also don't really want to outsource it. I kind of decided that I am going to do the marketing site because the product is changing so much and because I need to constantly iterate on who the market, you know, that product market fit and getting those features in there every week. And so at some point I was going to work on it in July. It's probably going to push to August to do that marketing site. Cause then once I have that, then I can start to connect with the people who are actively searching for a tool right now. But again, there's just only one of me and I'm trying to build right now the features that are like, oh, this is a differentiator from the alternatives that people are using, you know, like those power features, the automation rules, the custom fields and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're definitely in a new phase now. And now it's prioritization of the roadmap and not just, let me just keep building and building.
Yeah. To talk more about pricing, because this is why it's so hard is because so many of these things are interrelated. Pricing at this point is actually really closely related to the product and which features I decide to build and when. There is a challenge with the pricing model on this. What I currently have is per user pricing, $49 for like I said, three users and then $20 a user after that. In this market especially, people view users very differently than I think most other SaaS products that are per user. In this market, I'm dealing with agencies who have a mix of full-time employees and freelancers and clients. And all of those are different types of users. And some of them are temporary. Some of them are part-time. Some of them are clients and they should only see certain things and not others.
Right, different version.
Yeah. And so I started out with this pricing model because the obvious reasons. It's in this market, most companies use per user. The potential for expansion revenue as companies grow, you want to match the value for the size of the company, all that kind of stuff. I'm starting to think, like, let me just take that objection off the table. I hear it from some people. Some people are just totally upfront about it. Other people are like, well, I sort of pay per user for Asana or for this other thing, and I'm not against paying per user. And then some people, I sense that it's there, but they're not saying it.
It's tricky. It feels premature. Hopefully you can experiment with it where it doesn't take you 6 months to change your pricing like it took us. Then you can really actually experiment.
I mean, I was playing with this last week. I went to the group. I was like, hey, everybody is asking for the ability to share processes or tasks with guests, with temporary contractors or freelancers. I was starting to spec out the ability to do that within the framework of my per user model where you can have a guest, you could share a single task with them, but they don't actually log in. They have limited permissions and things like that. And so I started to spec that out And that in itself would be a very big feature for me to build. Even then, I started to hear a little bit more like, okay, well, I could share one task, but really I want to share a whole process with a guest. And then I'm thinking like, all right, well, in that case, you would need to invite the guest as a full paid user. But then they get to, yeah, but this person's not a real teammate. They're just a temporary person. Like, even large companies have a large amount. Some of them have a huge amount of freelancers.
It feels like it's different between read and write permission, right? Like, you're creating tasks and managing them compared to you're just executing on them. I mean, that it's a tricky issue. I know when we look at your product, we think of it as, okay, who's going to use it? It's probably going to be the three or four people who are engaged in like marketing and publishing content.
Yeah. See, I think that SaaS companies are, on the one hand, they're better because you think of users that way. Like, you're just going to think of Cardhook employees as users, and that would be great.
And it won't be every employee, it'll be the people that use it. And then your hope is that it works so well in one department, the other department looks over and says, what are you guys doing over there? We want to try.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think that SaaS companies don't have as many repeatable projects as a client services company does. And the client services company has these projects that are very people. They need people to execute those projects. And in order to scale that up, you need to have impeccable processes. So what I'm thinking is, instead of trying to fit this like guest feature into the per user model, like, I could just take that whole objection off the table and go with like three pricing tiers, starts at 49, goes up to like 200 a month, and just tier it based on like power features. But you get unlimited users. When I say unlimited, it might be up to like 30 users or something like that. And if you're a large company, then call us and
call us for pricing. Yeah. Yep. Makes sense. If someone's going to run their entire business with 50 people on it, it's worth more than $200.
Yeah. I'm starting to think that like the expansion revenue, the per user pricing would kick in at the like enterprise level, but everything below that should be like, you don't have to think about your team and mm-hmm. you can just share it with as many people as you want.
Right. Get the right value out of it. So on. Then you'll move up tiers as you kind of get into the next category of user. Yeah, it's tricky, and you have a lot of different things, and it's just you. What I would be doing is I would be paying very close attention to my internal mood and my emotions, and then I would do whatever I could to keep myself positive. So, you know, if you find yourself in one of those like doubt holes of like, did I really just spend a year on this? Is this the right thing? That's when I would invite 100 people. Keep the highs coming.
You're right, and I do sort of try to self-manage you know, the mindset. I always get into a rut when I'm too much in my own head or privately. Like last week, my mastermind buddies, I probably drove them crazy because I wrote like a huge dump, like a mind dump into Slack the other day to get their feedback on all this. Where I run into trouble is when I'm not going to the market and getting customer feedback. So now that I'm home from Europe, like I've already started emailing every early access person to be like, here's my calendar link. Let's get these calls booked. I need to talk to more people, you know?
Cool. And then you get the marketing site rolling, and then you'll start hearing from people that your product is actually not ready for, but that they will be good customers. And then you'll start to get an indication of which features to focus on.
Exactly. The nice thing is maybe like a blessing and a curse is I'm not crunched for time. I don't have a runway. I guess I do have a runway. That's not completely true. But it's not like three or 6 months from now, I need to go find a job. It's my full-time focus is paid for. I've got sustainable cash flow from audience ops. That's fine. But then I don't want that to make me, you know, it's not like I'm getting lazy, but I do want to keep this sense of urgency.
Yes. You know? Optimism and urgency. Yeah. Amen.
And then the other thing with all that is that commitment or the adoption issue, because that's an objection that I'm hearing too, which is like, this seems like a great fit for us. We're going to do it later in the year when we're not so busy, or you just caught me at a really bad time, or like, we plan to overhaul our processes when we launch this new service line. That's when we want to implement Process Kit. I'm hearing that all the time. And so I started to write out draft copy for like, what if I launched a productized service around Process Kit, like done for you or like done with you, like a 1 month consulting to get your processes in order, get your team trained up on Process Kit, kicking that around a little bit. But I've got other things to work on than that right now.
You know? Yeah, that reminds me of one of the things we found that we like so far, just from the past few weeks, of having a pipeline with identifiable stages, is that you can quickly see where people are piling up and not taking the next step. And then you can address that gap. Okay, how come people are requesting a demo, being approved for a demo, but not scheduling a demo? So then you could look at that and say, okay, right there, what do we need to do to smooth that over? Let's send a video that shows the product. Let's send a quick video from the CEO directly saying, hey, thanks for signing up. We're so excited to speak with you. And maybe that'll help tip things over and create a link. So what you're talking about now is that, okay, they're interested. Now the next step to adoption, what we've done is we've tried to do a lot of done for you things because so one feature we launched is landing pages. But people already have existing landing pages. And so for them to come on board to our landing page platform, that's a big gap. They either have to transfer it over or copy it. Well, they have to do work. So we've identified the best customers. We've said, we'll just build that landing page that you have right now built in another tool. We'll just build it for you in our tool. How about that? We're just trying to smooth over. How do we just get people to adopt and make it as easy as possible?
I mean, that's what I did back with Restaurant Engine. I was just like, we literally looked at their crappy restaurant website and we were like, let's, like, my team will just grab all the content off that and put it into our templates, you know?
Right. So it's not a big thing for you to go create a new website.
Yeah. Yeah. This is definitely going to be an ongoing challenge with this product because I wish that it were the type of product that you could just turn it on and set it and forget it. It's just not that. Like, I need people to adopt it with their team.
Do you think that the ideal customer already has these processes written out somewhere, whether Google Docs or Notion or somewhere?
Yes, the ideal All right. customer does.
Okay, so maybe that's a potential avenue of just give us access to the Google Doc, and we'll
oh get sure, the first, I mean that would be that's sort of what I spec'd out in this consulting service, which would be like, let me audit your current processes. We're gonna find the most efficient way. We're gonna get your like my team would actually bring your processes into Process Kit for you. We would do like a private workshop, recorded workshop with you and your team to get them trained up on Process Kit and start to use it. And that would be $1,000 or $2,000 for the 4 week engagement. And then you're right. a Process you're Kit in. Customer and you've invested in it. So you're committed to yep. it and that's it.
Yep. Cool. I like that version of things.
And then, you know, down the road, there's no way this will happen anytime soon, but I want to is to have like template processes to have a, and I've already done research with people about like, what are the most common processes that like new customer onboarding, new employee onboarding, you know,
yeah. Publishing a blog post,
invoicing, bookkeeping, stuff like that. Like, yeah. Blog posts, podcasting, like have those ready to go that you can just one click import or my team can import for you. And that's, you know,
that I don't think will be a problem for you just given how many different processes you're going to see being built inside. I mean, if we sign up, you will very quickly see how we publish a blog post, how we announce a new feature, how we, you know, how do we talk about an outage? It's all going to be there. It's all very, very common issues.
Yeah. All of these things that we're talking about are priorities. They all need to get done today, yesterday. The question is, which one am I going to work on today and which one am I going to be somewhat okay with pushing off to next week? And the thing that I want to work on today, aside from talking to customers, which they're booking on my calendar, is building those differentiator features. You know, like, yes, it already documents your processes, which you can do in Google Docs. You could do that in the competitors. And yes, it does projects that like you can manage a project just like you do in Basecamp or Asana. Okay, great. People have complimented the interface. Great. It looks and feels good, but it's not differentiated yet. And I know what I'm building. It's this automation system so that your projects actually like automatically adapt with changes and people get automatically assigned and custom fields and automation rules and all that stuff. So that's the kind of stuff that you really can't hack together in an Asana or a Basecamp, or that's what I want to build over the next month and then shout from the rooftops, like, this is better, you know?
Right. I see what you mean. Yeah. Right now it's approaching feature parity with other tools that you can do the same things in, and you haven't gone to the differentiation piece yet.
Yeah.
Coming soon. Coming soon is your friend.
I mean, there are things today that are, I think, even better. You can fire up a new blog post project and it automatically loads in your process and automatically assigns the right people with due dates. Like, that's today. And you can't really do that, at least not in a nice way in some of these other tools, you know?
No, not in a way where it feels like it's actually meant for it.
Right.
Cool, man.
So yeah, that's what I'm stressing out about.
You know, related to that, just to briefly touch on it, in terms of priorities and roadmap, we've had a very difficult situation over the past few weeks where one of our largest customers, this is well into the six figures in revenue annually for this one merchant, six figures in revenue for us. For them, it's tens of millions in revenue for them. But they came to us with a new strategy that they want to approach and asked us to build the features for it. And it was one of the first times we were confronted with the cost of saying yes to building those custom features was simply too high. And we had to tell them no. And that was surprising to them and a strange experience for us internally, where we want to say yes, but it was also empowering to be able to say no to that large of a merchant. And they might leave. We might lose that revenue. And we had to kind of stare that right in the face and be okay with it, because of the doing what's right for the other customers. And right now we're very focused on features that people need in order to have a successful holiday season, right? Black Friday is coming up. We don't have that many development cycles between now and then. We want all these things in the product by September so people can use them, test them, and be happy with them in time for Black Friday and the holidays. And derailing those 2-3 cycles that we have and focusing on these very custom features for this large merchant would really not be the right thing for the rest of the customers and for the business overall.
It sounds like that's smart. And you've been through holiday seasons before. You know how valuable those seasons are when they go really well. So you could literally compare, like, the monetary value of a successful Black Friday season to the monetary value of this one enterprise customer.
Yes. Yeah. So it,
or the cost of your developers on that. You know?
Yes. And also the team happiness, which is one of the things that I've really been focused on ever since going to Slovenia a few weeks ago. When I got to Slovenia, I had a set of assumptions in my mind on what was going well and what was not going well and how to fix things. And going there in person just washed all of those assumptions away. I was just off base on a lot of them. And being there in person was very, very helpful. One of the things that was most important was that I realized what had happened in the company over the past few months were a few things. So what happened was when we set aside, okay, this is what we're going to do in this development cycle, we would then look at those features and spec them out, and then we would start estimating. And what was happening was that we were being overly optimistic in our estimates. And what that led to was setting expectations inappropriately, right? So let's say this new analytics feature that everybody wants, we say it's going to be in this development cycle, it'll be ready in 6 weeks. Then you set that expectation for the entire team beyond just the engineering team. So now you're talking about the customer side of the team in Portland that's talking to customers and telling them when to expect things and getting people happy about new features coming out. So then we would set the expectations with our team and with customers. But because we had done a poor job of estimating, we would then fall short of those expectations. And so we would build something, even though it was a great thing that we built in 8 weeks, because we had set the expectation in 6 weeks, everyone was disappointed. And because everyone was disappointed, the engineering team never got that positive feedback loop of, you guys are awesome that you released this. Nice job. Thank you. This is making everything better for everyone. And so the engineers were in not a depressed place, but they were not getting love. They were working incredibly hard and then not getting any love for it, which is just, that's a bad situation. We really had to step back and say, oh, this is more our fault, more the management's fault of not doing estimates appropriately and getting developers into a situation where they were working, you know, the last 2 weeks of a sprint would end up being 12-hour days for 2 weeks in a row. And then on top of that, to not get any love after the release goes out is not sustainable. It's not healthy. It's not a situation you want to keep working.
So what, what do you do? Like, do you just pad more, you know, pad the estimates and like how, what have you changed?
So the estimate process is changing. The people responsible for the estimates are also changing. And so now we're toning down how much we want to get done in each sprint, and we're padding the estimates. And what we want to create is an environment where the norm is nice and calm. And from time to time, things get stressed. What I found when I went to Slovenia is that the norm is very stressed, and every once in a while it gets calm. And it's all related to the process, related to the estimates, related to the expectations. So it really helped clarify, like, oh, this is our fault. This is the people at the top. This is not the engineers not going fast enough. This is the management's fault for not setting the environment for them to succeed and be happy and be calm and set expectations and make people happy and get the feedback and everything right. else.
And then you've got the added location thing with the team kind of split into places across the world. And
yes. And so you're not seeing.
Are there any technical team members in Portland?
We have two customer engineers in Portland. And so they're a hybrid of sales, success, and support. It's a really critical role where we used to think of it as just, well, let's keep as many support tickets in Portland as possible and only send it off to the engineering team when absolutely necessary. That's what the role used to be. It has since expanded in scope because of its value. And so when you are doing an initial sales call with a really big merchant that we really want to nail down, having an engineer
somebody
there,
can come in and speak the language.
Yes. Right. So then you're talking sales. And then in the onboarding process, they're being pulled in constantly. Hey, we want to get Justuno pop-ups working. How do we do this with this thing? And how do we get it on the thank you page? So they're involved in that.
Get that handled in Portland without having to disrupt the,
yes.
the I love
yes.
it. That makes
and
so
then,
much sense.
Yeah. And then it used to be in the support department, and we kind of kicked it out into its own customer engineering department because it was really more than support.
I feel like I need one of those for audience ops.
It is a phenomenal role.
That's one of the few things that kicks to me is when there's like we're setting up this blog post on this customer site and their site is doing something wacky and only Brian can figure that out. That gets annoying.
Yes. But. So it's a phenomenal role. It requires a very specific, curious personality. So we've had multiple people in that role that are almost like self-taught engineers, and they're just naturally curious people. So they bumped up across engineering and just dove into it themselves. And this role is this amazing opportunity to just dig into a million different problems. And then from there, decide, do I want to go towards sales? Do I want to be a front-end engineer? Do I want to go back-end? So we see it as a very likely temporary role. Like someone comes in for a year, year and a half, and then they're like bulked up in their skills. And then they can go elsewhere. So right now we have Nigel in there. He came in. He's like he's a buy used cars and take them apart and make them work again personality. Like okay. I have no idea.
It's not me, but
yes.
All right.
Yes, exactly. But you kind of build, like take things apart and build them and just naturally curious and also a natural teacher. So now he's moved up into like the lead role there. And then we have a new person that just came in. And it's that same type of very curious person, did a bunch of different things early in their career, bumped up across engineering and was good at it. And now this is like an exploration.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, it's cool.
Awesome. That's all I got.
Cool, man. Yeah, I think next week I want to talk about marketing. I've been thinking a lot about what works these days, what gets attention these days, what type of blog post do people read, if any, what type of podcast do people listen to, what type of videos would they actually sit down and watch. So as we're revamping this sales process, along with that, we are relooking at who are ideal customers and really defining them with, like, we're going through that whole academic exercise.
On that topic right now, I'm reading Obviously Awesome April Dunford, I think.
Yes. Yes. We have that circulating in the office as well.
Yeah. Really good. Really good. It's on positioning and, you know, making sure that you're targeting customers who are just pre-positioned to really want your solution. And obviously something that I'm thinking a lot about right now. And, you know, with marketing and yeah, we'll touch on this next week, but like I'm finding with Process Kit, or at least I'm trying to think about it more in this way of like marketing is the product. Like let the product be the marketing. I'm just so focused on product right now, like product market fit. Hard to verbalize this, but like the product itself, the differentiators with the alternatives and going out there and screaming from the rooftops like, hey, you people are running projects in a really inefficient way. There's a better way of doing this. You know, I'm starting to kick around ideas for like writing a book that just really dives deep into the problem that I'm solving with Process Kit and like making that an actual thing, like, you know, making it like a, you know, building the product around this story of a problem and how people can solve it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's right in a lot of cases. We find ourselves in the same way. Our marketing, doesn't matter how effective it is, it's not nearly as effective as the product just doing a great job and doing what people want it to do. There's Wes Bush, I believe his name is, just came out with a book called Product-Led Growth. And he's not like some like world-famous author. He's kind of in our same circles on Twitter and everything. So that might be a good person for you to talk with, not only about product-led growth, but also getting a book published that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool. A paperback I got on Amazon.
I'm going to write down product-led growth. Awesome.
Yep. All right, Brian. Great to catch up, man.
All right, dude. Well, yeah, hopefully we'll get a few more episodes in the next coming weeks without another like quarter of missing Bootstrapped Web. We'll see.
Yes. I'm buying a house.
Are you?
That might throw things off a little bit in August. Yes.
Cool.
Well, yeah, we're officially staying in Portland. Thank you.
Good stuff. Good stuff, man.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Right. Later.